The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It is Monday, April 5th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Join me and our guests for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Joining me to my left, the maestro, our engineer, John DeJohn.
Thanks, everybody.
Hey, John, how was your weekend this weekend?
Good weekend. I just kind of sat around and did nothing.
Did nothing, huh?
Yeah, I worked at the cafe all day Saturday, but Sunday was spent relaxing.
That ain't so bad, working at the cafe. You can hardly call it work. And also joining us for the second show in a row in our own studio here, Cannabis Carrie.
I couldn't figure out how to get out of the studio on Friday, so I've just been here under the table all weekend.
We've kept her under the table. We're feeding her lettuce and water. She's doing just fine. We got a great show coming up today, and of course, Carrie brings us our news headlines right after the first break. So, Carrie, what's on tap today?
Well, we're going to talk about a couple of cannabis conventions that were held this weekend. Steve Cooley down in L.A., we've talked a lot about him. He's got some aspiring plans. We're going to address that. And, we're going to go to Philadelphia and talk about some easing of some cannabis laws there.
Oh, yeah, great news there in Philadelphia. Chris Goldstein and the folks out there at Philly Normal will be very happy to hear about this. And maybe later this week we'll go out to Philly and get some news from them. Thanks, Carrie. Also coming up today is our Daily Toker Tunes. It's Roots Monday, where we bring you the best in blues and rock, blues and jazz and folk and all that good stuff. Carrie's our news editor, our music editor for that day, so we got a great tune coming up from the Sometime Six Band. Then it is the first Monday of the month, and so we get our This Month in Normal update. We'll be speaking with Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal from Washington, D.C. He'll tell us what's going on for April with all of the marijuana law reforms that are pending in legislatures across the country, as well as some debunking of the DEA and their latest fact sheet. And that leads us to the end of the hour, where I'll be doing one of my patented radical rants. This is a look at the DEA. They have just released a top 10 list of the top 10 reasons we shouldn't legalize drugs, in their words. Of course, they're talking about marijuana and the legalization efforts happening out here on the West Coast. So we'll debunk that for you so you don't have to be afraid of people bringing these things up. You'll know exactly what to tell them. Also, I want to mention that we sent out our prizes to our winners in the Homegrown Contest. Homegrown Contest is over, and so prizes got shipped out this weekend to Mike in Iowa, Joe in Florida, Eric in Wisconsin, and Josh in Washington State. Also, we had that Roscatelli Smelly Felly contest that we did a while ago with the Octobag. James won that out in Oregon. We mailed that to you as well. And for all five of you, a special bonus you did not know about, I sent those T-shirts and that bag in a souvenir box from the canceled Las Vegas Cannapalooza, as well as an extra-large Cannapalooza T-shirt, which is really pretty cool because it doesn't say Las Vegas or the date or anything. It just says Cannapalooza, all things cannabis. So, you know, it's a T-shirt that'll still work even though the event got canceled. The souvenir box and a special autographed photo from me. Wasn't that sweet?
Aww.
Let me see that photo there. This is the one we sent out here in case you're looking to see what the autographed photo is. It's me with a Buddha's palm citron. This is a citrus fruit you can get in very few places, but I found it on I-5 in California when we were driving back.
That's right, back from the Cypress Hill Smokeout.
Speaking of, they're having another one of those gatherings. The same people, Guerrilla Union, that put on that Cypress Hill Smokeout, is putting on the spring gathering. Takes place on May 8th, a Saturday, and I'll be there doing a panel. Steve Bloom invited me out. So
Will that be back in San Bernardino?
Back in San Bernardino.
Oh, nice event, nice venue.
We're flying this time, though.
Oh, come on. What fun is that? I love the road trip.
I gotta go buy a plane ticket.
Yeah, I love the road trip.
Me and Carrie are gonna go on the road.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll meet you guys
there. We'll meet
there.
You there.
All sorts of events are taking place coming up in the next few days as well. We'll tell you all about them in the Cannabis Community Calendar coming up soon. This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation. We'll be right back after these messages. Make sure to visit our sponsors. They help keep us on the air. And if you're interested in advertising on Normal Show Live, send us an email at stash@normal.org. All the info you need is at stash.normal.org/advertise.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and THCF has clinics in 10 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Michigan, New Mexico, and Rhode Island. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or call 1-800-723-0188.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
This weekend, the 39th annual Hash Bash was held at the crowded University of Michigan's campus. Police are estimating that over 5,000 people attended, and many openly smoked cannabis to celebrate the event. The sunshine, along with enthusiasm for Michigan's 15-month-old medical marijuana law, was credited with a larger-than-normal turnout. About 10 University of Michigan campus police ringed the crowd's perimeter. They made 9 arrests at the event for marijuana possession, 1 for possession of marijuana, heroin, and ecstasy, and issued 4 citations for illegal sale of marijuana, said the University of Michigan public safety spokesman Diane Brown. Even if a person had a state card to possess medical marijuana, smoking the drug on campus is illegal, punishable by up to a year in jail under state law. Those charged on campus might plead guilty to a lesser crime of marijuana use, punishable by a 90-day jail term. Brown said some attendees took to the streets of the city of Ann Arbor off campus, where the fine is only $50 for marijuana possession. No off-campus arrests were reported. Another large cannabis convention held this week was the cannabis convention on Saturday in the city of Denver, Colorado. The event almost didn't happen in Denver, as the event's organizer pulled out a few weeks before the event, taking vendor application money with them. DailyBuds.com and Kush Colorado Magazine stepped up only 1 week ago to make sure that the event would go on as planned. Local, state, and federal political figures present at the convention affirmed their belief that marijuana laws would carry on to become less restrictive, and it was plausible that its use for medicinal purposes may become completely legal in the next few years. The number on attendance hasn't been released yet, but those that attended said the attendance was numbered in the thousands. The event was expected to be attended by about 100,000 people. We'll see when all the final numbers come out. Now, unlike the Hash Bash in Michigan, there were no openly cannabis consuming at the Denver event, but it seemed like everybody had a great time.
Yeah, kind of interesting how the smokeouts draw like 5,000, but now these expos are drawing 50. right? 50,000 people with no smoking. It does kind of point out how marijuana is becoming accepted in the mainstream as kind of a business in a lot of states. A couple things about these smokeouts. We get these emails all the time at Normal from really well-meaning people that email us and they say, we want to put on a smokeout. We want to put out a rally. We want to have a march or whatever. And they always talk about doing a smokeout. And I just want to give you a hint here. The success of a smokeout on a scale, you know, if you're going to give it 1, 2, 3, or 4 stars, is based on the number of digits of people that show up. Okay? So, like, if you're going to have a smokeout and it just shows up and it's just like you and 3 of your friends smoking dope in a park, you know, that's a 1-star smokeout, right? That's no good. If you can get it up to double digits, you know, 50, 60 people, that's great. That's a 2-star smokeout. 3 digits, you know, now you're really cooking. And then, of course, a 4-digit smokeout, like here at the Hash Bash, that's what we're really looking for. And the point I'm trying to make here is that the idea of a smokeout is a cool idea as far as from a civil disobedience standpoint, but unless you have the numbers to back it up, it can really backfire on you, not only from you getting arrested and having to post bail and all that, but also just from a public relations standpoint. It looks kind of pathetic if you say, we're going to legalize, we're going to have a smokeout, and like 6 folks show up. Right. So think twice about the whole smokeout idea. My general advice to people is start having rallies first. And once you can start building a core group of volunteers and get some good turnout to some of your rallies, then start thinking about some of the smokeout stuff.
People in Philadelphia will soon have eased marijuana penalties. The decriminalization move was spearheaded by District Attorney Seth Williams and worked on by 2 members of the state Supreme Court, Chief Justice Ronald Castile and Justice Seamus McCaffrey. They are hoping to clear about 3,000 small-time marijuana cases annually from the court dockets. The diverted cases represent about 5% of the criminal court's caseload. People caught with small amounts of marijuana for personal use will face a fine and not a criminal record. The new policy change will be implemented later this month. Now, police who have been briefed on the changing policy have said that they will not change their procedures. Lieutenant Frank Vanor said that marijuana possession is still illegal and they won't stop locking people up. Quote, we're going to stop people for it. Our officers are trained to do that. What happens beyond that is up to prosecutors, Vanor said. Until they legalize it, we're not going to stop. Still being researched is whether prosecutors can simply switch all the small marijuana arrests onto summary charges of disorderly conduct. The shift might require a change in state law or in city ordinance, according to the prosecutor's office.
Well, you know, typical law enforcement here. We don't make the laws, we just enforce them. You know, they say, well, marijuana is still illegal, so we're still going to bust you for it. And yet, in other states, when we pass a medical marijuana law that they're not supposed to bust people, well, it's still federally illegal, so we need to bust you for it. Right? It just comes down to the fact that they like to bust people for weed, the cops do here. Now, Philadelphia is kind of a special case in the state of Pennsylvania. You got to understand this. Everywhere else, every single other county in Pennsylvania, if you're caught with a small personal amount of weed, it's a non-custodial sort of situation, right? You're given a summons to appear in court, but you're not thrown in the back of the squad car, taken down to the station, fingerprinted, you know, mugshot, booked, all of that stuff. Only in the county where Philadelphia resides, and in practice, only in Philadelphia for the most part, are people actually arrested and taken downtown and booked. It's actually a mandatory custodial situation that they must take you in. And this is what they're talking about changing. Changing this now so that it's merely just a fine only and a non-custodial sort of situation. It is the idea of decriminalization. The police that are responding to this do have a valid point, though, in that statewide, we're not talking about Pennsylvania decriminalization. They're just talking about it as a policy. So under technical letter of the law, the cops are right here. They can still bust people and take them in Philadelphia for marijuana possession cases. So this just illustrates the need to take this beyond just Philadelphia, take it on a statewide level, and start working for decriminalization across the entire state.
Los Angeles District Attorney Steve Cooley is known for going after medical marijuana dispensaries. Now the LA District Attorney is eyeing a higher office, that of State Attorney General. Cooley has placed himself square in the opposite corner of cannabis activists in California by opposing any and all cannabis law reform measures. He is running on an anti-marijuana platform, which may backfire in the state at large. The son of an FBI agent father, Cooley was a reserve police officer for 5.5 years, attended law school, and started at the DA's office as a law clerk back in 1973. Critics from inside and outside of the DA's office argue that Cooley is unwilling to compromise once he makes a decision, and he has focused too narrowly on medical marijuana. Cooley does have his supporters in the state of California. He is the first DA to be elected to three terms in L.A. since 1936. Critics think that his push to prosecute medical marijuana dispensary owners may cause some problems, since recent polls show public support for legalizing cannabis for all of California is on the rise.
I know that I don't want to be the guy running for office in California with the anti-marijuana platform. That just does not seem like good timing to me, or a very good taking of the pulse of the California voters out there. We'll see what California does as far as the votes go, but Steve Cooley for state attorney general, that's like a nightmare come true. Next, they'll tell us that Bonnie Dumanis wants to run for governor. It'd be the worst of all possible worlds here. Hey, we got to take some time here down at the bottom of the hour. Ganja John has something special for us.
Are you good?
It's a normal shout-out.
You know, I think we need to give a couple shout-outs here, but my first one, I don't know if you guys can see me on the cam yet, but I have a new hat, which I absolutely love, from Madeline Martinez down at the Cannabis Cafe. And these are for sale, and you guys who follow me on Twitter, I'll go ahead and throw my email address up. It's at GanjaJohn is my Twitter. And you go ahead and throw me an email. The hats are $30, and I will send them to you personally, because I know people are waiting, and it's been a tough wait to get this stuff out. But I think I can get these hats out. And, you know, I need to give another shout-out to the girl on my right, this beautiful Carrie right here, because she's been here on Friday and Monday. Now she's hiding. But I hope my wife doesn't hear this, but this is a a good woman right here.
Yay! Yeah.
And I also, another shout out to all the people at the cafe who've been giving us, giving me and Russ herb. So.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much for that. Hey, and also, since we're on the topic of shout outs here, I'll get one out that is kind of important here. I'm looking on our cameras in the chat room, and sitting there on the cameras is my home slice, my nugget, Pony Boy, down in Las Vegas, Nevada, Los Marihuanos! Good to see you, Pony, on the cams. We'll get you on the show here pretty soon. I know you got that Trippin' on Trichomes album coming out pretty soon. So we'll get you on the show. We'll preview some of those songs. It'll be a good old time here. You see there, Pony, right there.
I know. My love nugget, Pony Boy, I love you. My little love nugget.
Love nugget? Oh, okay. Is that legal in this state?
It's legal in Nevada.
Yeah. What stays in it? Yeah. Okay. All right. Coming up here on the next couple of segments here. Next, we're going to be going to our Daily Toker Tunes. This is Roots Monday. So we'll be bringing the best in blues, jazz, folk, and country. Carrie's got a great group here called the Sometimes Six Band with a song called 420 Stomp. Then Alan St. Pierre will be joining us. He's Normal's executive director, and he'll be calling us from Washington, D.C. And he'll be talking about the history of the Alaska v. Raven case. Now, there's been a lot of confusion about the marijuana laws in Alaska. A lot of the Drug Enforcement Administration and the anti-marijuana people are trying to say that Alaska legalized marijuana in the 70s, and then they all freaked out because it was so terrible to legalize marijuana that in the 1990s they recriminalized marijuana. And that's supposed to tell us that we shouldn't try to legalize over here on the West Coast because Alaska has taught us how terrible that would be. Well, Alan will be here. He's got a front page post on the normal.org website. He'll be here to break down the history of Alaska's personal privacy laws that still allow Alaskan citizens to have 1 ounce of cannabis on their person at home for personal use. Alaska has one of the strongest personal privacy rights in its constitution of any state. And then at the end of the show, I'll be going on a radical rant. We're going to talk about the DEA's top 10 reasons not to legalize drugs. This is a document the DEA just put out in response to the drive in California to legalize marijuana. You know, Tax Cannabis 2010 did officially make the ballot in California. We will be voting on marijuana legalization in the 2010 election in the state of California. Also, the OCTA proposal has passed its Supreme Court test for its ballot measure or its ballot title. It will now be going forth for getting signatures and should be getting those signatures anytime now. And Washington State's I-1068 is still working. They're working on legalizing marijuana up there in Washington State. So not just one, not just two, but possibly 3 states this year that will be voting on legalization of marijuana. Not medical, not decriminalization, actual legalization, buying, selling, cultivating and possessing marijuana. And then We've also got the states over there in Massachusetts, Vermont, and New Hampshire that have put legalization bills into their legislature. Used to be you couldn't even talk about legalization. Now we're putting bills in state legislatures. So six states this year that have seriously taken a look at legalization of marijuana. We'll also get some updates on the latest states to take a look at medical marijuana. South Dakota has just gotten medical marijuana to qualify for its ballot. And the states of Florida and Arizona currently have medical marijuana initiatives that are gathering signatures to place on their ballot. And then, by 2012, Nevada will be going for legalization as well. So plenty of marijuana law reforms taking place in America right now, and we'll tell you all about them. All right, folks, you know what that sound means. It's 20 after the hour. It's time to take an extra special break. Me and Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John will be right back with you after some Puff Puff Pass.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
There is a peaceful solution called a peace revolution. And now let's take back America.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by PlanetFantastic.com and Bella Blue Tie-Dye Fashions. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
I always love when Monday rolls around. We get to the Roots music, Roots Monday, and Cannabis Carrie. Carrie, what do we
Roots
got?
Roots Monday.
Roots Monday. What do we got for today?
Well, today we have another shout-out, Ganja John. A shout-out to our friends at MarijuanaMusic.net. Nate,
yes.
Thank you so much for bringing us such great music. He's very liberal about sharing the music from his site with us, and this actually came from his site. It's the Sometimes Six Band. They were officially born during the summer of 2002 at Nat Bailey Stadium in Vancouver, B.C. Brad Curtis, Murray McLaughlin, and Sandy Stewart had just finished playing a senior men's baseball game at the historic Nat Bailey Stadium on a hot July afternoon and were sitting back talking after the game and realized they all shared a passion for playing music, and that began the journey of the Sometimes Six Band. Since its creation, founding members Brad Curtis and Murray McLaughlin have played with a variety of excellent musicians, each helping shape the sound of the Sometimes Six Band. You can check out marijuanamusic.net for more great music from this toker-friendly band. And today's toker tune is called 420 Stomp. It's nice and bluesy, and I think you guys will enjoy it.
Oh, hit it. Let's do it. The 420 Stomp from the Sometimes Six Band for your Roots Monday.
I've got a rocket in my pocket. I'm gonna spark it up. I've got a rocket in my pocket. I'm gonna spark it up. If you wanna join me, I'm gonna spark it up. Well, let's go down to Gastown.
Sometimes Six Band with 420 Stomp. Now that's kind of my, what the hell am I trying to say? That's my kind of music. That's what I was trying to say. I'm enjoying it so much I can't even speak.
thanks to Cannabis Carry for bringing us that Roots Monday tune. Hey, before we take a break, I want to let you know about a couple more events that are happening. I will be performing with the John Trudell concert that's coming up. John Trudell's on tour helping to support the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. I'll be performing along with Tim Pate, John Cornette, and Cousin Kenny in Grants Pass, Oregon, Friday, April 16th, and in Ashland, Oregon, Saturday, April 17th. That's right, playing bass and singing. No ranting this time. For the ranting, you'll have to wait until Sunday, April 18th. I'll be at the International Cannabis and Hemp Expo in San Francisco, California on Sunday the 18th. 2 days later, April 20th, 420, on Tuesday, I'll be at the University of Washington in Tacoma giving a presentation on reefer madness and the history of prohibition. We'll be streaming that live here on Normal Show Live, so you'll get to see that entire presentation. Then the following weekend, April 23rd to the 25th, at the THC Exposé in Los Angeles, California, I'll be manning a booth and doing some broadcast there. And then the first Saturday in May is the Global Cannabis March. I'll be there doing speeches and marching and hanging out with everybody at Pioneer Courthouse Square here in beautiful Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo. It's a way of life. And then Saturday, May 8th at the Spring Gathering in San Bernardino, California, sponsored by Guerrilla Union. For all of these events and more, you can send me an email at stash@normal.org or check the normal.org calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, a.k.a. NORMAL, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORMAL in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORMAL, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORMAL, NORML.org.
Founded in 1970, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the oldest, largest, and most popular lobby of cannabis users in the world. From our Washington, D.C. offices, we lobby our federal government. And from our chapters nationwide, we lobby our state and local governments to end the war on American citizens who choose to use cannabis responsibly. We take you now to our nation's capital for a visit with Executive Director Alan St. Pierre and a look at this month in NORMAL.
All right, it's great to be speaking again to Alan St. Pierre in Washington, D.C. Alan, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Well, I'm doing good, and of course, you know, as April dawns, that means that we all get really, really busy here in marijuana law reform. Before we talk about the events coming up, let's talk a little bit about the legal situation, the laws. You know, we've been reporting on so many states that are looking at marijuana legalization, decriminalization, medical marijuana bills, but by this time, some of them, you know, have probably fallen by the wayside. Can you update us on the status of some of the latest bills that are going through the state legislatures?
Well, some of the ones that have gone down in the most recent weeks have been in Virginia, Hawaii, Washington State. There's at least one other state one that just went down in the last couple of days.
Would that be North Carolina by any chance?
North Carolina would be one that, yeah, I think has gone down.
Yeah.
But there's another one just in the last couple of days that is not going to advance any further. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one it is, but the states that are still largely in play are Illinois, Tennessee, New York, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont. These states all have pending legislation that could well move towards reform.
Yeah, and in addition to the legislation that's happening right now, we of course have the three West Coast states with the initiative process trying to pass marijuana legalization. California's made it to the ballot. Oregon and Washington are still trying. What's your take on those legalization efforts?
Well, such as they are certainly popular in the regard to medical marijuana down in Arizona. There's no doubt that that will pass down. Yeah. It's already passed twice before in 96 and 98. So one presumes it will pass readily. Second, in Nevada, well, it doesn't appear that there's any surveys yet that I'm aware of that indicate that there's a strong majority of people in Nevada that want to see it legalized in the same way that next door neighbor California does. The field polls there indicate 56%. There have been some other polls indicating 52 to 53%. So that shows a pretty solid base of support, not as high as most of us would like when we launch these initiatives, but we haven't seen any of those numbers hardly in Nevada. Nevadans tried to vote on this a couple years ago, failed at the 39% level. 2 years later came back and failed at the 44% level, which was a very nice increase, but very commensurate with the national average, and the national average is about 44% right now.
Okay.
And then in Oregon, if Oregon's was to get on the ballot, I would presume it would win, just because of how well vetted the issue and how popular cannabis law reform is and how active the reformers are in Washington. In Oregon, in Washington State, this initiative, if it gets on the ballot, one presumes, because in Washington you don't have to have a balanced number of votes that come in. Two or three counties in the state, notably King County, if you win in those big metropolitan counties, then you can prevail. And because the initiative process doesn't really heat up till the summertime, the Seattle Hemp Fest lands right in the middle of it. If that gets on the ballot, that could just as well pass it too.
Yeah, what an amazing time we are living in, where we could have the entire West Coast of the United States voting on marijuana law reform. Is it something that you thought you'd see so soon?
No, I guess in the sense that I didn't think that in 2010, in this case, Richard Lee would start this process off by really making a remarkable amount of self-sacrifice by donating upwards now of $2 million of his own personal wealth in this direction and that of his company. And it's been great that these billionaires for years have been supporters, but I mean, just do the math here. Doing $5 or $6 million a year, if you're worth $6 or $7 billion, these individuals are sort of flipping pennies in our direction, which is great. I don't demean that at all, but to put it in some perspective of what Richard Lee has done by putting down so much money to move forward, really, I think, has encouraged other people, certainly Douglas Hyatt up in Washington, seeing what Richard's done, and Oregon, which has clearly been a state since the mid-80s, using the initiative process to try to move this issue forward towards legalization in any number of forms, whether it's been through hemp, medical marijuana, or outright legalization.
You know, there is some controversy within reform circles around this. First of all, let's let our listeners know, there's only, I think, 26 states where the initiative process is in effect, so not everybody has this option to take the issue before the voters. But in the states that do have this option, there is some controversy amongst reformers as to whether or not it's too soon to be trying for full-out legalization, and that perhaps we ought to be working to strengthen medical marijuana laws into some of these states, maybe introduce dispensaries or maybe protect patients' jobs or protect their, you know, their homes or whatever else it might be. What is your opinion, or even Normal's opinion, on the notion that it's too soon to fight for legalization and we should just fix the medical marijuana laws?
Well, I certainly are exposed to that argument at the extreme level, to be sure. And since as the founding of Normal, and I think the sui generis of all reformers, is towards a legalized system with respectable taxes for responsible use. So ultimately, that's where I think we're going in this. Medical marijuana has been really an adjunct created by the federal government's extreme prohibition by not yielding any quarter to these sick, dying, and sense-threatened patients. Had the federal government just allowed Robert Randall and a few tens of thousands of people in the United States to legally use marijuana that they could go and get from their pharmacy, just like all these other drugs, it would be an extraordinarily small, narrow cast group of people that would be using it, as compared to today, that many people will go through dispensaries on the West Coast buying medical cannabis. So the pox is on the house of the federal government for not yielding any quarter on this. So I can appreciate, on one hand, it's clear that if you're a medical marijuana consumer, you have a lot of concerns regarding employment and things like gun rights and the ability to drive and children. Those are all still in play. Organ donations, all things that we talk about regularly here on the podcast. But that is, in my view, no argument to stop the much larger and clear momentum of legalization, for which we have to all acknowledge largely makes medical marijuana rather moot. If you do not have to go through the guise of a doctor and have a particular ailment and you want to use it and it's legal, then, well, it's a fait accompli policy-wise. And that's why some years ago when Keith Straw warned the movement, do not go into the box canyon of medical marijuana. They knew this in the 1970s, that in making the argument to reschedule it was simply to make that argument, and if anything, to lay down the clear legal and scientific reasons why marijuana should be rescheduled, but not hang that up entirely on the larger issue of legalization.
Right. We're speaking with Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal in Washington, D.C., and you posted on the Normal website this weekend just an amazing document that came from the Drug Enforcement Administration. They call it their top 10 reasons to not legalize drugs, not marijuana, drugs. They always have to say it that way. And you focused on one point that they made, and I'd like you to tell our listeners about this, because a lot of them, we've got a lot of younger listeners that may not know this history, but it was fact number 6 that they brought up. They said, legalization has been tried before and failed miserably. Alaska's experiment with legalization in the 70s led to the state's teens using marijuana at more than twice the rate of other youths nationally. This led Alaska's residents to vote to recriminalize marijuana in 1990. So they make it sound like Alaska legalized, everyone freaked out, what about the children, and then they shut it back down. What's the truth, Alan?
When I first came to Normal in 1991, one of the first sort of wild-eyed myths that I confronted was the idea that Alaska had legalized marijuana and that the voters needed to take that off the books and to restore order and sanity up there. And I came in just as that vote had happened the year before, and the voters had, in fact, voted by a small majority to, in their minds, recriminalize marijuana. There's no doubt about it. They weren't taking it away from legalization. What had happened was, in 1975, the Supreme Court ruled in a case called Raven that because, in this case, Hawaii and Alaska have the most strongly worded constitutions, like they're the newest constitutions written in the 1940s, 1950s, regarding individuals' rights, and they're much more articulated than any other states. And while Hawaii has taken a pass on extending these rights and privileges to marijuana consumers in their home, in Alaska, a state that really respects people's privacy, mainly because of the distances and the low ability for police to really impact people's lives, they acknowledge up there that if you want to use cannabis in the privacy of your home, then police really have to have a warrant and move more than on more knowledge than just you using marijuana or having an ounce on your possession. So that's was the law of the land. It was effectively decriminalized, as other states had done legislatively during the same time, like Oregon in 1973 and the Nebraskas and the Maines of the world, all were doing that in the 70s. Alaska just happened to arrive at it by a Supreme Court decision called Raven. So when Bill Bennett came in as the drug czar in 1988, the very first project he took up was, we have to go and find the most tolerant marijuana laws on the books, and where we can knock them off, let's go and do so. Well, they probably would have liked to try California, but the cost and the scope of that didn't hold out a great prospect for success. Alaska, where there's huge influence over the citizenry. There's a very high percentage of military personnel up there. Alaskans receive more money per capita from the federal government than any other state. And so they were able to go up there and gin up attention in no violation of the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act only affects partisan politics, not necessarily an issue campaign like this. So Bill Bennett and company went up there, and I remember watching the Phil Donahue show that was broadcast live from up there that was talking, debating this topic. Well, ultimately, as I mentioned, the citizens voted narrowly to recriminalize it. It was never legal. You could never go to a store and buy it. Citizens could never grow it and distribute it, but it was simply going to be recriminalized. Then reformers from Normal and the ACLU, the original lawyers who argued the case, brought this a guy named Bill Bryson was the lawyer, brought the case back up and said to the court, wait a minute, you have to actually amend the state constitution if you want to do this. You can't just do this by vote. And so nobody was willing to go and amend the state constitution on this issue. So the marijuana was made decriminalized again from mid-1991 right to this day, and there was a period of time for almost 5 years that marijuana was actually available for decriminalization amounts at 4 ounces. In appeals courts, the judges had ruled that police needed to have a warrant to come to your house if you had more than 4 ounces. Anything less than that warranted no concern from the government. And until the team of Lisa Murkowski and her father, Frank Murkowski, as they switched positions between the U.S. Senate and governorship, they literally did a very odd thing between daughter and father, both of them kept advocating strongly against marijuana, and they were the ones that were putting this before the legislature. Again, the legislature wouldn't touch it, and 2 years ago, the appeals court, the Alaska Supreme Court, kept the appellate court decision in place, but they did lower it back to 1 ounce. So, for all the bluster of the DEA and the Bill Bennett's and Walters of the world, the idea that Alaska had legalized marijuana when no state has legalized marijuana, as we just talked about in the first part of our discussion, that is the discussion today, is legalizing marijuana in these states. That has never happened. So the idea that you and I pay through our tax dollars for the DEA to promulgate such a ridiculous lie is pretty insulting amongst many.
Yeah, it's one of the most insulting things that our federal government has done to us over these past 70 years. Alan St. Pierre is the executive director of Normal and the Normal Foundation. He joined us on the first Monday of every month to give us this month in Normal, and we're looking forward to 420. Thanks a lot, Alan, for joining us.
It's good. Amazing 420. Let's get ready.
All right. We'll see you later. Right after the break, more on the DEA's Top 10. This is Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
Which of you are ready to admit to having used marijuana in the past? And they want us to go around and ask each of you. Senator Kerry, yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Senator Edwards?
Yes.
Senator Lieberman?
Well, you know, I have a reputation for giving unpopular answers at Democratic debates. I never use marijuana. Sorry.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Senator.
Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine.
Everything will be just fine. Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah!
All right, everybody, welcome back. Yeah, that's right. It's time for the Radical Rant. It's 49 after, and making an executive decision here. We're running long today. We're going to have to go long on this one. I just know it. There's so much to rant about in this document that I can't get it all in 10 minutes, so bear with me. All right, today we are going to take a look at... We were talking to Alan St. Pierre there and addressed one of the points in this document. This just came out from the Drug Enforcement Administration, and it's literally called... The top 10 reasons not to legalize drugs. And it's in response, of course, to California getting on the ballot for their legalization initiative. So, in the tradition of David Letterman, I'm going to present to you the top 10 reasons not to legalize drugs from our own government, somewhere deep in Dick Cheney's secret bunker. The top 10 facts about legalization from the DEA. Are we ready? All right. Number 10 fact from the DEA as to why we shouldn't legalize marijuana. We
have made significant progress in fighting drug use and drug trafficking in America. Now is not the time to abandon our efforts. The legalization lobby claims that the fight against drugs cannot be won. However, overall drug use has dropped by an astounding third in the past 20 years, while cocaine has dropped by 70%. 95% of Americans do not use drugs. This is success by any standards.
Okay, they say 95% of Americans do not do drugs. Well, 2 out of 3 Americans use drugs, if you count alcohol. And 1 out of 10 Americans use cannabis every year. And this is according to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. So I'm not sure how they get away with saying 95% of Americans don't use drugs. In fact, if we were going to include all the prescription and over-the-counter drugs, I'd say 95% of Americans do use drugs. But that's not the point. We're not talking about legalizing drugs. Notice how the DEA has to say it's about drug legalization. They can't say marijuana legalization because they know people generally are starting to support that. Now, in the United States, we've had some of the worst criminalization laws in the Western world with regard to marijuana, and we still lead the world in lifetime marijuana use. Meanwhile, the Dutch, you know, over there in the Netherlands, they have open tolerance of marijuana sales in coffee houses, and yet they don't have the same problem with drugs. In fact, they have half the use of marijuana and other hard drugs that we do here in the United States. So obviously, the different laws don't make much of a difference. The drug use rates don't have much to do with drug laws anyway. I got some charts I want to show you here. These are the 20-year rates of cannabis and drugs and alcohol and tobacco use. Now, the green lines here are the cannabis use rates for lifetime, monthly, and annual use. And in those that we find is that all of them have gone up over the past 20 years. This next graph shows you all of the other illicit drugs, cocaine, heroin, crack, hallucinogens, meth, and inhalants, all have gone up over the past 20 years. The only drugs whose use has gone down over the past 20 years, in red and purple there, are alcohol and tobacco. And in fact, tobacco has gone down by such an incredible amount, it's starting to reach levels that more kids are actually smoking marijuana than smoking tobacco. And that's not because marijuana use has gone up a whole bunch, it's because tobacco use has gone down a whole bunch. And guess what? We didn't have to arrest anyone and throw them in a jail cell to pull that off. Now, getting to our number 9 reason why we have to cannot legalize drugs, according to the DEA.
A balanced approach of prevention, enforcement, and treatment is the key in the fight against drugs. A successful drug policy must apply a balanced approach of prevention, enforcement, and treatment. All three aspects are crucial. For those who end up hooked on drugs, there are innovative programs like drug treatment courts that offer nonviolent users the option of seeking treatment. Drug treatment courts provide court supervision, unlike voluntary treatment centers.
Okay, well, that's a nice sentiment that we shouldn't that we should equally treat people. You know, that we should have an equal and balanced budget for prevention and for treatment. Unfortunately, when you look at President Obama's budget, it kind of looks like this: the fat kid on the seesaw. For law enforcement and interdiction, the Obama budget calls for $9.9 billion in fiscal year 2011, whereas for treatment and prevention, a measly $5.6 billion. This is the same sort of ratio that we saw during the George W. Bush administration as well, so don't think it's a Republican or a Democrat thing. They are continuing to lock people up, to try to arrest people, and to break into their homes and ruin their lives all over this plant. Now, and by the way, when they say war on drugs, right, they say we've got to have this fight against drugs. Keep in mind that when we talk about that, 49.8% of all drug arrests are for marijuana violations, right? Half of all arrests in the war on drugs are for marijuana. So it's really a war on marijuana. And when you look at the people that are arrested for marijuana, over 850,000 every year, 89%, almost 757,000 people, are arrested for possession alone. Not trafficking, not selling, not cultivating, not dealing, none of those things. Cultivation alone. All right, let's move on here. We got fact number, this will be number three to get, or number eight on the top 10 list, excuse me.
Illegal drugs are illegal because they are harmful. There is a growing misconception that some illegal drugs can be taken safely. For example, savvy drug dealers have learned how to market drugs like ecstasy to the youth. In the legalization lobby, even claim such drugs have medical value, despite the lack of conclusive scientific evidence.
Yeah, okay, this is the old drugs are bad, that's why they're illegal. Drugs are bad.
Drugs are bad.
Yeah. Drugs are bad, so they have to be illegal. And they mentioned ecstasy. I don't recall anybody here on the West Coast talking about legalization of ecstasy, but it does actually have medical purposes. It was originally used in the mid-1980s for people going through therapy with severe trauma. They've been raped or abused as a child or suffering post-traumatic stress. Ecstasy actually does show some promise in those sorts of treatments. But this isn't an ecstasy show. I just want you to know how they always have to bring up some other drug when they're trying to demonize cannabis. Now, as far as how dangerous cannabis is compared to other drugs, I got another chart for you that's quite interesting. It shows what is called the therapeutic index of recreational substances. A therapeutic index is a measure of the effective dose versus the lethal dose. That means how much of it will get you high versus how much of it will kill you. And when we look at this chart, we find that alcohol's therapeutic index is 1 to 10. That means the amount it takes you to get a buzz, if you drank 10 times that, you would die, right? A 1 to 10 ratio. Anything less than that would be more dangerous than alcohol. The only drugs on my list more dangerous are GHB at 1 to 8, nutmeg, yes, nutmeg's actually a hallucinogen, at 1 to 7, and heroin at 1 to 5 as the most dangerous drugs. But the drugs that are safer than alcohol, cocaine, ecstasy, codeine, mescaline, roofies, Special K, nitrous oxide, mushrooms, LSD, and cannabis. And when we start talking about those last three, mushrooms and LSD have a 1 to 1,000 ratio. You would have to take 1,000 times as much mushrooms as get you high to actually die from them. And cannabis has such a high ratio, it's almost practically immeasurable. The DEA's own administrative law judge, Francis L. Young, said that it would take 1,500 pounds smoked by an average man in 15 minutes to get a lethal dose, which works out to about a 1 in 20,000 ratio to be able to die from cannabis. It's just not possible. It's not going to happen. All right, let's move on to the next one here in the list. Our fact number number seven from the Drug Enforcement Administration.
Smoked marijuana is not scientifically approved medicine. Marinol, the legal version of medical marijuana, is approved by science. According to the Institute of Medicine, there is no future in smoked marijuana as medicine. However, the prescription drug Marinol, a legal and safe version of medical marijuana which isolates the active ingredient of THC, has been studied and approved by the Food and Drug Administration as safe medicine. The difference is, you have to get a prescription for Marinol from a licensed physician. You can't buy it on a street corner, and you don't smoke it.
Oh,
Yes.
You know, I just wanted to add something here. You know, Marinol may be approved by science. I feel strongly about this Marinol thing. It may be approved by science. It is not approved by my tummy. And it is not approved by my head, because those things suffer when I take Marinol.
Marinol's no good for you, Ganja John.
No. Marinol is a catalyst to... we'll talk about that later.
It's worse than the plant, that's for
sure. Yeah, it's definitely worse. Definitely.
Well, I wanted to point out, too, that it was really nice of the DEA to mention that 1999 survey they talked about, according to the Institute of Medicine. Well, this was the 1999 Institute of Medicine report, which concluded, quote, "It does not appear that marijuana is a gateway drug to the extent that it is the cause or even the most significant predictor of serious drug abuse," end quote. So nice of the DEA to recognize a report that says the gateway theory is bunk. This 1999 report also noted that only 9% of marijuana users developed dependence, compared to 15% for alcohol, 17% for cocaine, 23% for heroin, and 32% for tobacco. It also noted, this 1999 report, that there is, quote, "a distinctive marijuana and THC withdrawal syndrome has been identified, but it is mild and subtle compared with the profound physical syndrome of alcohol or heroin withdrawal," end quote. And the marijuana withdrawal causes symptoms like restlessness, irritability, and mild agitation, whereas the alcohol or heroin withdrawal can cause seizures, hallucination, and severe cravings, not to mention death. So if somewhere later in this top 10 list, the DEA wants you to believe that legalizing marijuana is going to lead to a whole bunch of addiction, remember that they are the ones that brought up this 1999 report from the Institutes of Medicine. It's also interesting to note that they made no mention of the 2009 statement by the American Medical Association, which concluded, quote, "Results of short-term controlled trials indicate that smoked cannabis reduces neuropathic pain, improves appetite and caloric intake, especially in patients with reduced muscle mass, and may relieve spasticity and pain in patients with multiple sclerosis. To the extent that rescheduling marijuana out of Schedule 1 will benefit this effort to develop cannabinoid medicines, such a move can be supported," end quote. The AMA, the American Medical Association, is saying that smoked cannabis is medicine. The doctors are saying smoked cannabis is medicine. 14 states are saying smoked cannabis is medicine. But the DEA wants you to think that it's not. All right, let's move on. Let's see, which one are we on here? Number 6 for their top 10 list would be from the DEA.
Drug control spending. Drug control spending is a minor portion of the U.S. budget. Compared to the social costs of drug abuse and addiction, government spending on drug control is minimal. The legalization lobby claims that the United States has wasted billions of dollars in its anti-drug efforts. But for those kids saved from drug addiction, this is hardly wasted dollars. Moreover, our fight against drug abuse and addiction is an ongoing struggle that should be treated like any other social problem. Would we give up on education or poverty simply because we haven't eliminated all the problems? Compared to the social costs of drug abuse and addiction, whether in taxpayer dollars or in pain and suffering, government spending on drug control is minimal.
Well, it's nice that the DEA actually came up with something somewhat true in this rant here. The drug control spending in the United States budget is $15.5 billion for fiscal year 2011. The overall budget is $3.7 trillion. So in that respect, you're absolutely right. It is a small portion of the budget. In fact, the entire drug war budget doesn't even equal the single military construction line in the Pentagon budget, which is $16.9 billion just for military construction. But what they're doing here is they're trying to pivot from a fact onto a falsehood. And what they're trying to say here is that making money on law enforcement and making money on tax revenues by, or saving money on law enforcement and making money on tax revenues by regulating marijuana would not match the expenses we suffer from our kids becoming slaves to drug addiction. Now remember, just one point ago, they were citing the 1999 Institute of Medicine report that said there is no such thing as the gateway theory. But somehow, if we legalize marijuana, our kids will become slaves to drug addiction, slaves to drug abuse and addiction, and we'll have pot zombies roaming the streets. So, yeah, a little bit of internal inconsistency there. But let me make a point about this. First of all, I love it when they call us the legalization lobby. Like, you know, we're all riding around in Cadillacs and Armani suits, you know. The budget
for all drug legalization organizations, MPP, Normal, ASA, SAFER, SSDP, LEAP, Drug Policy Alliance, etc., all those groups combined might be $10 million. Maybe $10 million. And they've got a budget of $15.5 billion. So I always love it when they call us the legalization lobby, like we're this big, huge, powerful lobby or something. But another thing that I'll bring up here is this idea that if we legalized marijuana, it would cost us more than what we bring in. They always like to bring this in and compare it to alcohol. They'll say, oh, well, we do alcohol taxes, but we don't even close to bring in what alcohol costs us in drunk driving and lost time at work and health costs and so on. And that's true. And that's because alcohol's bad for you. Alcohol can kill you. Alcohol is addictive. That's why it costs so much to society. Cannabis is none of those things. In fact, there was a Canadian study, and I'll bring this slide up here for you. There was a Canadian study done just last year on the annual cost per user of various substances in Canada. Now, in blue, they indicate the health care costs. Tobacco costs about $800 per user in Canada. Alcohol costs the country about $165 per user. Cannabis, do you see that little sliver there? Cannabis costs $20 per user in the country of Canada. Now, on the other side, the enforcement cost of it, tobacco costs virtually nothing to enforce because really there's not a whole lot you have to do to keep it, you know, illegal and all, or to keep it legal and all, check kids' IDs, but that's about it. With alcohol, $153 to enforce alcohol laws. Now, that's, you know, DUIs and patrols and all that kind of stuff, you know, the ID card systems and so on. The enforcement cost for cannabis prohibition in Canada, $328 per user. So, if you look at it this way, what you're looking at is that Canada is spending $328 per user to save $20 in healthcare costs. Seems a little ridiculous, doesn't it? And I've got to imagine there's a similar dynamic that would be going on here in the United States of America when we start to look at our rates and what it would cost here in America. But just apply some common sense to it. In California, they're saying if we legalize cannabis, that it could bring in $1.4 billion in tax money. Now, all of these points that the DEA is trying to make would be really scary if nobody smoked pot now, and suddenly if we legalized, there'd be a million pot smokers, right? That would be pretty scary, right? No pot smokers, and then boom, we legalized. Oh, look, all the pot smokers. But the fact is, we're smoking pot now. We're here now. There are 2.3 million pot smokers in California now. So if they cost anything, we're spending that money on them now, right? So the 2.3 million people smoking pot in California, if they cost whatever they cost, we're having to pay for that now, and we're bringing in zero in taxes, right? So it's a net loss. Whatever they cost us, it's completely lost. And I don't think the costs are going to be that much anyway, but whatever it is, it's not going to be, we're not bringing any taxes to offset it. Now, if we were to legalize and bring in those taxes of $1.4 billion, this scare tactic only makes sense if you assume all the new marijuana smokers will eat up that $1.4 billion, right? Because we're already, you know, we're already paying for the pot smokers who exist now. So by bringing in $1.4 billion, we'd be reducing the costs, whatever they are, by using that tax revenue. So there'd have to be enough new pot smokers to eat up $1.4 billion. Now, I did some math on this and tried to figure out what would that be. How many, if let's say California doubled in pot smoking, right? They went from 2.3 million to 4.6 million pot smokers. That assumes that there's 2.3 million people in Canada sitting there, or in California right now, sitting there thinking, gosh, I'd really like to smoke pot, but I can't because it's illegal. And then when it's legal, suddenly they'd smoke pot. So assume that. I know it's quite a stretch that there's 2.3 million people not smoking pot now that wish they were. But let's assume that California doubles its pot smoking. Those 2.3 million new tokers taking up $1.4 billion worth of taxes would have to cost California $608 each in order for them to eat up all the tax revenue. So somehow we have to believe a Californian pot smoker would cost $608 when we know a Canadian pot smoker costs $20. Now, I know my California buddies, they smoke up pretty good. I don't think they're smoking up 20 times better than Canada, though, all right? All right, that's the top five of the top 10 facts for legalization. We're going to save the other five to tomorrow, so we'll be back with more Radical Rant tomorrow. And for everyone here in the studio, Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John, we're going to sign off. Good show today, folks.
Thank you.
Having fun, John?
I'm having a great time, and you know, I want to thank all you chatters out there, and if you can, donate to Normal. Please.
That's right, baby. Follow us all on Twitter, at Radical Russ. You can email us, stash@normal.org. The blog is stash.normal.org. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. We'll get part two of my DEA Top 10 rant tomorrow. There's just so much. I knew I was never going to be able to get it in 10 minutes. I couldn't even get it in 20 minutes, but that provides us much more stuff to talk about tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow with Electric Tuesday and the California Marijuana Report. I'm Radical Russ. See you tomorrow.
We love it.
We love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live. The voice of the marijuana nation.
Dang it all one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.